First, welcome. And lest we forget, I want to thank all of you for this year. To me, it has been most rewarding to watch new strength, new confidence, a new assurance of a divine purpose emerge in all of us, a sense of knowing that we are being guided, that we are in our own humble way released from a sense of mortality and witnessing the expression of divine will more and more. Ever so relentlessly, Spirit is freeing all of us from a divided consciousness. You may not be aware of it. You may even resent the activity of Spirit in you that frees you ultimately from a divided consciousness, because you will not recognize it at the moment when it happens. You will say, "Look what happened to me." And it is only 6 months later or more that you look back, and if you are able to piece together the threads, you will see that because of this that happened to you, something else came to take its place. Always we are alerted in an unexpected way, and always where it seems to hurt the most. But that's very logical. When you wish to reprimand a child and the child refuses to obey, some parent will put away the thing the child desires most eagerly, its favorite toy. Why? Because knowing the child wants that toy, you hope that in his desire to get back that toy, he will say to you, "Well, I'll do this and that if you will return that toy." In a sense, where we are most vulnerable, something will happen to us. And it happens there because that's where we're going to notice it. That's precisely the place where we're going to come up with a start and say, "Well, look at this. Why did this happen?" If it happened in a less noticeable place, it could not accomplish its purpose. You may even say, "But there are 50,000 other people who know far less about Spirit, in fact have no interest. Why didn't it happen to them?" And the answer is always, it wouldn't have done them any good if it happened to them. They would simply take this as a blow, but there would be no change of consciousness there. To you, it's happening with a purpose. Oh, you may not approve at the moment. Then again, you don't have the right to approve or disapprove. It has to happen because the law of karma is relentless. The law of karma must adjust divine inventory at all times. Now, there's a very interesting little phrase that we never discussed fully in the Sermon on the Mount. It will explain to you some of the problems that have occurred to you and what they are trying to get you to do in return. This is in Matthew, 5th chapter, verse 41. That's after he says, "And I say unto you that ye resist not evil, that if any man smite thee, sue thee at the law, take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also." And this is I saying unto you, the following phrase, "I say unto you, whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain." Now, when we discussed this originally in the Sermon on the Mount, we did not discuss it from the viewpoint that we're going to look at it now. It has to do with grace, which is the subject for today. If any man ask thee to go a mile, go with him twain, meaning double the distance. So it would seem that if you took it literally, if somebody orders you to walk a mile, you walk two. Now, right in this sentence, the understanding of it spiritually will release us from the big question mark we have been asking ourselves. Why did this happen to me? Let's say you didn't go twain. You say, well, how could I do it if I don't understand it? And the Spirit says, violation of spiritual law will always occur because you don't understand it. And so you cannot pass by anything you do not understand. Every material object, every material condition, every mortal person has an invisible spiritual identity. When you walk that physical mile, you must also walk the spiritual mile. When you know the physical person, you must also know the spiritual reality there. You cannot, in this work, have a human relationship. There is no such thing. You're only pretending. Only spiritual relationships exist. And whenever you continue in a human relationship, whatever it is, when some fly enters the ointment and you discover the imperfection of that relationship in any aspect, it is because relentlessly Spirit is going to pursue you until you are out of a divided consciousness. Until you think you are spirit, your friends are spirit, but you still have human relationships with them. Oh, I know it's not going to be done tomorrow. But Spirit is going to continue pursuing that ideal in you until you are praying without ceasing, until every relationship that you maintain is a spiritual one, until you drink a spiritual glass of water, until you eat a spiritual piece of cake, until you do everything from the invisible realm of spirit first, and behold it then manifest in the visible. Whatever you're required to do in this physical world must be understood by going into the spiritual kingdom of your own being first, the first fruits to the Spirit. And then without ceasing, abiding in the consciousness of the Spirit, in no way attempting to maneuver your physical universe to suit your particular purpose. Now, you may not know the stakes, but you will know if you persist in the mortal concept of life. You will find you've been playing for higher stakes than you realize. There's an article in this morning's paper. The stakes are so high that maybe at this moment we may think this is something we need not be concerned about. There's a scientist in Stanford, Arthur Kornberg, Nobel laureate scientist, acknowledges one of the giants of the age. It is he who created artificial DNA. That is the master chemical of life, the genetic material from which physical and behavioral characteristics are derived. So according to Mr. Arthur Kornberg, who became a Nobel laureate in science, he has uncovered, and the scientific world believes he has, those basic ingredients in genes which determine how human beings will behave. So much so that it is possible for one person in this world who has control of such a faculty to manipulate the genes of unborn children. This is not something in the far distant future. You can put together any degree of individual you want if you are given the authority to do so. You can manufacture the kind of babies you want. You can even make mongoloids if you wish. You can make insane babies. And you can pair up anything you wish to pair up. In other words, whoever is in control of the bank of the genetic system of the human race is in a very fine position, if he happens to be a maniac, to terminate the human race at will. Now, says Mr. Kornberg, his problem is that capital has been withheld for scientific research. So he's very excited about this. He punctured his talk with a nervous laugh and spoke excitingly, developing image in his mind at a fantastic clip. He says, "I agree with those who say there is a peril. I agree, it's not a foolish question. But it must be taken with sufficient perspective, for I, Mr. Arthur Kornberg, have confidence that when we have all the information, we will use it wisely." Can you imagine the human race in the hands of a Hitler, who had a gene bank to decide what kind of children would be born? Can you trust the carnal mind, which gave us atoms that became bombs? Did it not say, "Oh, don't worry, this will be used for peace"? The moment we go into the belief that we have located the basic cause of all human life, we are in a twofold error. You cannot locate the basic cause of human life in matter. And secondly, when you are in control of the basic cause of the mortal image, you can manipulate that image even better than the carnal mind now does it. Now, this is how the carnal mind functions through the individual carnal mind. I'm telling you right now, it's very possible that someday this will happen on this earth. It's very possible that there will be banks, and you go to a bank and order A and C. And this will be the way humans are born. It's very possible. You know, they've been playing with this for quite a number of years. I will also tell you that it is impossible for the scientists who believe that this is the direction in which we must go, it is impossible for them to know God. It is impossible for them to know the Spirit. And yet this article is titled, "Scientist Speaks Out for Truth." What kind of truth? The truth of the carnal mind. Our little friend Peter, when he warned us about the end of the world, gave us a lot of possibilities of how that would come about. On the other hand, going through my files the other day, I found this letter from Joel Goldsmith, which he sent to me a month and a half after we had met. And that was, we had met on New Year's Day of 64. And here it is, February 21st, 1964, and this letter came. It seems pertinent right now because we're reaching another phase in this work. He says, "By now I am sure you realize that San Francisco is without doubt the most important city in the entire United States, insofar as the message of the Infinite Way is concerned. It's the city that gave to the Infinite Way its greatest impetus right from the start. And it's the city that sent out into all of the world the first and greatest amount of Infinite Way literature. It was in San Francisco that the very great classes took place that resulted in the books, Consciousness Unfolding, Conscious Union with God, The Master Speaks, The World is New. And so you know that if the work is once more taken up in San Francisco by someone really dedicated to God and to the message of the Infinite Way, that San Francisco once again will be the number one city of spiritual activity in the nation." That was in February of 64. Then he said something interesting to us, to Betty and I. He said, "Be sure that both of you will receive from me all that I can give you, and that you will accept." Emphasis on "you will accept." Now, this has really never stopped. This is continuous. And we keep trying to widen our acceptance. This is leading to the work of 1972. In 1972, today's talk, grace, will be the subject of the entire year. How to release grace will be the subject of 1972. It isn't going to be done in one session on one Sunday afternoon. It's going to be a year's work. And we're going to have to face certain truths even today to prepare us for that year. One of the truths we're going to face, we might as well face it as soon as we can, because the quicker you do, the quicker you are going to enable grace to live your life. There is never divine life in a human form. Never. And there is only divine life. Now you're going to have to face that. Not only face it, but do something about it. Dwell with it. Understand it. Or you're going to violate it and then say, why? There is no divine life in a human form. Now, where do you go from there? Everywhere is divine life. Can a human form give you anything? Do you really think a human form can give you anything? Or is something coming toward you from another level, which you interpret as being in a human form? When the paralytic is restored and is leaping away with joy and runs to tell the Pharisees, who say, "Who healed you? Who healed you? Why, I don't know who healed me, but he who made me whole said, pick up thy bed and walk. He who made me whole. Who made him whole? The realization of Christ made him whole. The realization of Christ makes us whole. But was a material body healed there? No. A material body was not healed. It is even said here that Jesus then conveyed himself away from the multitude. You know what that means. How does a material body vanish? And why did it vanish, if not to show us that it was the light? And if it was the light, wasn't it revealing the light was all that was there where the world saw a healed paralytic? And if that is the lesson, is it not revealing that where you are is the light? And that as long as you are in the belief that the light is not where you are, or that the light is there and there is a material body there too, you are in a divided consciousness. And this is the paralysis of the human race. The belief that we're going to dig deep into these genes and find out all about ourselves. Where's Christ in that picture? Completely forgotten. Where's Spirit? Completely forgotten. Where's God? Never heard of God. We're going to find it in genes. And then what will we do? We'll make scientists. Who wants any other kind of people? And probably only white scientists. Wherever Christ is forgotten, you have the potential of grave error. The paralytic represents the paralysis of the human mind, paralyzed because it is controlled and doesn't know it. Even a Nobel laureate in physics lives in a carnal mind and does not know it. And so you see a giant intellect. And this is the same as the Jews turning away from Christ in the first century. The Jew turning away from Christ is going on in every one of us every minute. In each of us, the Jew turns away from Christ. That is the division of consciousness. The material mind turns away from spiritual identity. It rejects it. It does not want spiritual identity. It must attack that which appears as Jesus Christ. Why? Because spiritual identity jeopardizes everything that the carnal mind stands for. The carnal mind is going to preserve its world. And even the paralytic who is healed because there is a glimpse of Christ, he can't stay on that high perch. There's no permanent change of consciousness there. 5 minutes later, he's running back to the Pharisees, all excited about it. He's shouting, he's happy. He's telling them, somebody healed me. He thinks he was healed. He doesn't know he was released from carnal mind, nor does the world. Nor does the world know that he who stood there releasing the paralytic from carnal mind was the very light of God. Even now, the world is unaware of the identity of Christ Jesus as the light of God that is omnipresent, that is the light of each of us. And so the Pharisees must turn on this light because all they see there is the carpenter's son. Why, it says in Jeremiah, it says in Nehemiah, it says in Isaiah, It says in Ezekiel, you cannot bear a burden on the Sabbath. You cannot. The book said so. What do you mean telling him to take up his bed and walk? And who are they talking to? They're talking to God. The very light of God has come to show them the ignorance of a human man-made Sabbath. Why, this paralytic had lived through many of those Sabbaths. He lived through 38 of them. They hadn't done him any good, had they? He'd been paralyzed for 38 years. Now, what good were those Sabbaths for him? Each Sabbath he must have prayed and prayed and prayed. And the next Sabbath he was still paralyzed. That was all right. But healing him was the crime. Imagine taking this poor man out of his misery and making him whole. That was terrible. Because the book said on that day you can't do that. Man-made laws. That's an extreme. There are other man-made laws that say we can't do this and can't do that. And so there were two Sabbaths. The human man-made concept of a Sabbath and a divine Sabbath. The divine Sabbath freed the man. The human Sabbath was nothing but a ceremonial of human concepts that had no power because they were unrelated to the truth about God. Those Sabbaths had no power to liberate man from any of his physical infirmities. This new Sabbath was a Sabbath from the sense of mortality. A Sabbath from the belief that divine life can in any way be prohibited from being harmonious and perfect. A Sabbath from the hypnotism of the world mind. Some of us now, through this work, are approaching our Sabbath. The release from the hypnotism of the world mind. We still have stumbling blocks, big ones. And if we were to list them, I think it might run something like this. We think there is life in our human forms. That might be your biggest stumbling block. And only when you know there's no life in your human form will you find your life. Only when you know there's no life in any human form are you acknowledging divine life as omnipresent. You know the life in a human form is not divine, and therefore when you acknowledge life in a human form, you are denying the omnipresence of divine life. You're still in a divided consciousness, saying one thing with your mind, one thing with your mouth, but acting a different way. That brings us to a good explanation, I think, of a passage here about the man going down into the pool. Sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool, but while I am coming down, another steppeth down before me. That's what we do. The pool of spirit. And before we can enter into total spiritual consciousness, every minute, another steppeth down before us. Your five senses rush out and engage the world. Your immortal thought before you can enter spiritual consciousness. Always, something steps in to intervene before your good intentions are fulfilled. You are prevented from resting in the knowledge that spirit is all that is here. Why? Because we have not yet learned that our consciousness determines our life. And it is not just the level of consciousness that you call mind, But it's that level which has accepted that I'm not looking for better health. That's a detour. I'm not looking for better supply. That's a detour. I'm not looking for anything or any improved condition. Those are the detours. That's the trap of the carnal mind. It starts you off looking to improve some material situation. And we, if we have pledged ourselves to truth alone, if we have determined through this power that moves us to let it move us without any interference on our part, we are walking toward the supreme vision that God is supply, God is health, God is perfection in all our ways. We don't go for supply, we rest in God. And God manifests as what we call supply. We don't go for improved health, we rest in God. And God manifests as health. Now let's go deeper. God is spirit. If you're looking to improve your health, you have a material concept of health. You're divided. If you're trying to improve your supply, you have a material concept of supply. You're divided. Spirit is supply. Spirit is health. In fact, spirit is everything. And so, when your universe is 100% spirit, and not even 1% matter, you have finally accepted the allness of God. The allness of spirit without opposite. That only spirit is. And then you're out of the hypnosis of the carnal mind, which projects into visibility the appearances of matter and the conditions of matter, which are total counterfeits of that alone which exists. Counterfeits about the spirit. You know, you can reach a consciousness where you can look at the material images without anxiety, without doubt, without fear, and without letting the mortal sense come between you and the pool. Before you are able to rest in the knowledge that this, what I'm looking at now, these are images of the carnal mind moving about, imitating the perfection of spirit that is there. There is no life in these images. You remove life from the images you see. You remove the belief that divine life is in those images. And when you remove that belief, you are fulfilling the spiritual law that God, Spirit, is all. You are praying. And if you remain in that belief that there is no divine life in the images or forms you see, then you are praying without ceasing. And as you remain abiding in the knowledge that life is not in form, that life is independent of form, that life is always present and life is always perfect, then you have found your true son, your true daughter, your true friend, your true wife, your true husband. You have found the invisible identity of everyone, and that invisible life is the universal life of God. We are called upon to live in the universal life of God consciously, continuously, taking everything in the visible world and translating it back into the invisible spiritual identity that is there. That is Paul's pray without ceasing. That is abide in me. That is acknowledge me in all thy ways. That is I am the way. All telling you that spirit alone, divine life alone, is present, without seconds, without opposites, and that all appearances which deny it do not contain divine life, and therefore need not be reckoned with. In you must come that inner knowledge that there where human form is, where animal form is, where vegetable form is, where material form is, only invisible spirit is. And it is being interpreted through carnal mind into these visible forms. There is no power to change the perfect spiritual identity that is there. And therefore, if the visible identity is imperfect in any way, it is a lie. It cannot be there. If you accept it there, you are in your divided consciousness again. You are sinning. You are violating the allness of God by a belief that there is something present beside the allness of God. You must go back into the fire. The alchemy of spirit has not yet completed you in the divine image so that you can walk in the kingdom of God. That's going to be all the work we do for a whole solid year. Now, in the chapter called Grace, Joel is just as firm as is possible at the level of the consciousness of his reader. He may not press the points home with as much clear definition as you and I have to do now, because there are hundreds, thousands of readers who would be unprepared to accept that there is no life and form. And though he may say so, he'll say it in a way that will not be too shocking to them. They won't even know he said it to them. But we have come a great way on our journey, and the world around us is not getting the message of truth. The world around us is still lingering in the old consciousness of the man of yesterday. Even when you started your world work this week, I'm quite sure that many of you thought that in spite of what was said last week, that you were helping the world, that you were improving the world. That's a divided consciousness. You have no power to improve the world. Absolutely none. If the world needed any improvement, God would have done it. When you do world work, you are seeing the illusion of the world, or you're not doing world work. You're not improving it. You're recognizing the non-reality of it. You cannot improve that which is not there. You cannot heal a paralytic. You can reveal that only the light of God is there. And if the world interprets that as a healing, that's their business. Your business is to know the truth. You cannot improve a business. You can only step aside and let the light reveal its ever-present perfection. And if that appears as an improved business, fine. But don't be fooled into thinking you've improved a business. There's a great statement in this chapter. God has no money. God knows nothing about fish, potatoes, and vegetables. Every human being has more money than God has. God has none. But we all go to God for money. We go to God for supply. And this whole chapter is telling us you don't go to God for supply. In human terms, you go to God for God. It's up to God to translate to the level of our needs. It's not up to us to go to the omniscient mind and say, I need this or that, or even surreptitiously to pray to God for this or that. And finally, in your consciousness without division, you will say, there's no me to pray to God, and there's no God to pray to. God being all, who is there to pray? Shall God pray to God? And then you'll find you can rest in the presence of God where you stand. In his presence is fulfillment, fullness of joy, liberty, freedom from every fear, doubt, division of consciousness. In his presence is grace. In his presence is sufficiency. Why? The moment you have fulfilled spiritual law to accept, only spirit is present. Only spirit is present. You don't have to be concerned anymore about how and when material appearances will improve or change in any way. You cannot accept that only spirit is present and have one eye on material changes. Who can you fool but yourself? The unreality of matter must be understood, accepted, and lived with. We must walk in our spiritual universe. The moment you walk in the material world, you are denying the spiritual universe as the allness. The moment you walk in a material body, you are denying the spiritual body as the allness. The moment you walk in a mortal concept of you or a neighbor, you are denying that immortality is the allness. You see why it takes a year more to do the work? And it is release from all these false beliefs that releases grace. My grace is thy sufficiency in all things. Says the Father to the Son. Says the Father to Spirit. Says the Father to Christ, the only begotten. And then the mortal man says, well, I'd like some of that sufficiency, but there's nobody to hear the mortal man. Now let's look at his chapter. Let's weigh these words against our own beliefs to see if we still have lingering remnants of belief that must be cut away. Some of us have been businessmen and women and have thought our supply must come through business. Right there, you must be stopped. You know you thought that. But he wouldn't be saying it if that's what you should be thinking. And so, there must be a change of consciousness. We have thought that our supply must come through business. The Master is telling us no. And some of us have had the joy of witnessing how we were removed from the business world and supplies still came in. Others have thought, because they were housewives, that their supply had to come from their husbands. And you know that's true. And of course, quite a number of you now have discovered it wasn't true. It seemed to be. But that is just a man-made custom. A man-made custom. See, like the Sabbath, it was a man-made custom. We had learned that the man is the breadwinner, and the woman's place was in the kitchen, and the man brought home the paycheck, and that's where the housewife got her income. But according to the Master, no. Someday we're all going to be sufficiently awake to realize that each one of us derives his and her supply from the same God. Never was it spiritually meant that God's grace should fall only on one sex, the male, for God's grace also falls on the female sex. And this was written, I think, around 63 or 4. And the day must come when it is recognized that it does so equally, that there is just as much in the female consciousness as in the male, with or without the help of the other. Now, of course, we've fallen into the belief of seeing a mortal male and a mortal female instead of a spiritual self. It takes quite a lot of retraining to come to the single eye, where you're not seeing mortal males and mortal females, but are seeing the one universal self expressing as. And yet, unless these words are meaningless and can be forgotten, they have a very important message which we must assimilate and live by. Namely, we cannot limit spirit by building boundaries of male and female around people, and then going along with the current custom of the carnal mind. And if we have that mental block within us, we are the ones who are breaking spiritual law. Of course, what is it saying, basically? Except, there stands the Spirit of God. So it doesn't matter what you're looking at, if it's a three-year-old baby, whether it's a boy or a girl, or a 30-year-old person, whether it's a man or a woman. Neither the age nor the sex is important. To you must be the realization that there stands the invisible spirit. And then the form will no longer have the power to hit you on the head with a hammer. It will no longer have the power to give or to withhold. It will no longer have the power to put poison in your food. It will no longer have the power to pull a trigger. It will no longer have the power to, in any way, function discordantly in your direction. All power is removed from the non-existent image. For all power is in the spirit, and your recognition that there is no power except in the perfect invisible spirit that is present, this is the undivided consciousness. And in that consciousness, grace flows. Joel isn't finished with that subject. Witness, he says, that in our modern world, more women are working and earning more money than ever before. But this is really only a prelude to a greater experience, when neither male nor female will have to struggle for a living. Neither male nor female will have to struggle for a living. One sex is not dependent upon another for supply, but both sexes are dependent on the kingdom of God that is established within them. They can share with one another, and that day will come. Consciousness is neither male nor female. Consciousness is divine. Consciousness is the Spirit of God. The lack of this awareness is a barrier to the flow of grace. Now, it's the same in our healing work, says Joel. There's no use going to God with a desire that God heal us of our diseases, or that God heal this in harmony or that lack. Real prayer is an opening of consciousness to God and then a communing within. Now, you've heard it many times, an opening of consciousness to God. Opening consciousness to God is a specific act which you do consciously. You must learn consciously to make your first connection with the invisible spirit before you do with the physical world. You will see that before you touch a leaf, something in you recognizes spiritual identity. Before you smell a flower, something in you recognizes spiritual identity. That's how you open consciousness to God. You're looking at matter, but spirit is what you must open consciousness to. The senses are rushing out to engage the material sense of life. And you must change that. You must open your consciousness not to the material sense of life, but to the invisible spiritual presence that is there. And that's the connection to the invisible world of the Father. That's the way you permit Christ in you to rise. Christ in you rising is the recognition of spirit everywhere. Before you touch the leaf, smell the flower, drink the water, eat the food. When you say grace, it isn't thank you, Father, for this food. The last minister I heard do that in public died the day after. Sometimes it's very embarrassing to me to watch that. A group of adults, it happened at a tape meeting I went to. They were all listening to some message which to them was very important, which I felt was not truth. And then there was a little food bit, and everybody gathered around, and before you could reach for whatever was there, someone had to say grace real loud so that God would be sure to hear it. And then, as the words poured out, we thank you for this food. It was almost nauseating to see that the belief in what allegedly was a high group was really just a material consciousness unaware of the illness of spirit, asking God to bless their digestive systems. It all sounds so holy to those who have not been released from the lie. But our grace can never be that. Our grace is always, whether it's food, or whether it's people, or whether it's conditions, our grace is always the awareness that only the Spirit of God is present everywhere. That's all you've got to do. There's nothing more you can do. And the moment you have acknowledged the presence of Spirit everywhere, You have sought the kingdom, and you have released yourself from the false carnal mind, which works 24 hours a day to present the untruth to its creation, the human race. Now you know that God created no mortality. No dying flesh. And when you are finally convinced that God did not create matter, and can even go so far as to agree with both the spirit and science that matter has no real existence, you will not try to improve matter, or to release pain from matter, or to save matter. But instead you will know that when I have accepted my spiritual self as the only self I am, and the spiritual self of my children as the only self they are, and the spiritual self of scientists as the only self they are, you will run up and down this world in your consciousness, releasing the world from its material appearance, until you are in the allness of spirit, and that's where you'll walk. Not interfering in a world of non-existence, not improving it, not correcting it, but living in your kingdom of spirit, knowing there is no life anywhere else, no power anywhere else, not being fooled. And then for you, grace will be the law. The kingdom of spirit is the kingdom of grace. We've all had enough manifestation now of grace. We know what it is. And of course, we'd like to see more of it. But you see, you have it all now. All the grace of God is yours now. And don't fall into the trap of looking for more. Because if you do, you're talking, thinking, being a mortal being, looking for more. Your immortal self is not looking for more. Your immortal self is living in grace. Instead of looking for more grace, get out of your belief in mortality, and right where you are, grace will manifest. Instead of looking for more health or more supply, get out of your belief in mortality, and supply and health will manifest. Whatever you seek, drop it. Get out of the belief in mortality, and then the omniscient spirit will manifest in a form that is needed, which may not be the form you were seeking. But we learn never to be so presumptuous as to think that I know better than the Spirit what I need. God's grace is the gift of Himself, appearing on earth as us. There's a tall one. God the Father appearing on earth as God the Son. Don't make the mistake of thinking this mortal flesh is God the Son. There are not one, there's not two, rather, there's only one. God infinite, appearing as the Son infinite. You have never seen with human eyes the Son of God, any more than you've seen God. And yet that Son is yourself. Nowhere where you look on this earth would you see with your human eyes the Son of God, and yet that's all that's here. That acceptance is necessary for you to witness the gift of God functioning as you. All that God is, we are, says Joel. And once we have overcome our religious superstition and ignorance, that will manifest. Just think for a moment of that statement, God is all you are. And think how many times you said, I hurt, I lack, why did they do this to me? Who are you speaking as? A false identity. You see, you can go out to change these things that have interfered, or you can get out of the false identity. And as long as we try to change the things that are causing us disturbances, we're not trying to get out of the false identity. We're trying to retain that identity, but improve the way it functions and operates. And that's the wrong approach. The life of God is not in mortal flesh. You are the Son of God. The life of God is in the Son of God, but not in mortal flesh. If you're in mortal flesh, you are making a choice between not being the Son of God, but preferring to be mortal flesh. You cannot be the Son of God and still function in the belief that you're mortal flesh. Now, in our meditation, in our living, it's the same. Here where I stand is the Spirit of God. God is present. There's no way to begin anything except with the knowledge that God is present where you are. To feel, wait upon the descent of the realization of the spiritual presence as you. So that where you stand is infinite Father expressing as the infinite Son. The will of the Father is in the infinite Son. The power of the Father. There's no one you're going to see throughout the entire day, the entire week, the entire year except the invisible infinite Son of the Father. That's all that you will ever bump into anywhere, no matter how many mortal forms you see. And whoever anywhere is entertaining an idea that is in any way jeopardizing you and what you are, they will discover that their idea will boomerang. It will dissolve. It cannot function in you because you in them are the invisible Spirit of God. The world that you were trying to do work for is your own infinite self. You rest in your infinite spiritual self, and all the appearances of form that come into it will come to you as the three magi bearing gifts if you have recognized that spirit is the only identity and that love is the law of spirit. There's no obstacle to love. It moves in every direction. It encircles the globe. It fulfills the law in spirit. And if you're not in spirit, you're separating yourself from the love of the Father, which manifests humanly as
the lack of this or the lack of that. When you're in your spiritual selfhood, love is law, and only love. Remember to grab yourself when you're reaching out to get now, because there's nothing to get. Love is the law, and love is fulfilling the law now. Don't turn away from the perfection of yourself to go out and get something to make you perfect. You are. We're going to pause a little, maybe about 20 minutes, relax.